This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
You want me to sing? Are you coming to the tree? They strung up a man, they say, who murdered three. Strange things did happen here, no stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree? They strung up a man, they say he murdered. Strange things that happened here, no stranger would it be. We met at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree?
BFM 89.9, it's 7:38 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. It is our supercut today and we've got, with humility, what we think is an interesting subject, because we're talking about future classics. We can't take credit for this. This actually was a listener suggestion. So Venita Gunalan wrote in and suggested that this is something that we talk about. So we took it on. And when we say future classics, I want to be clear, what we mean is the stuff that's new to us right now, but that in, I don't know, you know, 20, 30 years is going to be looked back upon as a classic of its genre in the same way that we talk about the stuff that we talk about, the same way that we talk about Ben-Hur, the same way we talk about The Shining. Can be any genre, can be anything, including films, TV shows, but that's what we're discussing, the things that will be viewed as classics in the future.
So that clip we played from Hunger Games, that song and scenes like that is why I'm convinced that something like the Hunger Games is going to last that kind of test of time, right? Mm-hmm. Compared to something like, say, Divergent or Shadow and Bone, which is on TV. And I think it's primarily because of that. It's not just a YA dystopian story. It's human, it's painful, it's haunting. And I mean, people are using the symbol from the Hunger Games in actual revolutions. Like the Milk Tea Alliance, for instance, has adopted it. We see it in Myanmar, in Thailand. So I don't know. I think that it's such an interesting conversation to have, because I think about the things I maybe enjoyed 20 years ago, and some of them I don't think I even remember anymore, right? Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that the Hunger Games can stand that test of time.
Also, that song gets progressively worse with every line if you listen to it. And then by the end of it, you're like, yikes, you know. So I don't know about you guys, but I didn't know how difficult this episode was going to be, just because it's very hard to pick movies that you think are going to stand the test of time and be called classics in 20 years. It sounds easy. It sounds like you just pick the biggest movies that come out, or the major blockbusters, or anything that has like a pop culture footprint. But it's not, because if you rewind and go to, say, the mid-90s, and you pick a movie from the mid-90s, then you start to realize that no one talks about that movie anymore. So that can't be called a classic. So then it gets very tricky, sort of like picking movies from the last decade that will have that kind of longevity, because there are so many movies that were big in that year that got forgotten. Like, they were huge, but no one talks about them. They have no pop culture, like, ripple effect.
So I think we should lay out the terms of engagement right at the start, because we struggled with this ourselves when we were talking about it. So we just want to be straight with everybody. We are only going to be discussing things that came out in the last 10 years, because beyond that, we're actually talking about things that have already crossed the line and are well into classicdom or on their way. So stuff that emerged, whether in our theatres or on our TV screens, in the last 10 years, and it other than that, it can really be anything. It can be any genre. It can be any type. I do want to talk, though, about why we think some things transcend. So with Hunger Games, I think part of it is that the books were very popular. It came out at a moment in time where dystopia is huge. You know, everybody was really invested for some reason in the world ending and people just scrabbling around in the dirt after that. And this happened to be kind of the exemplar of the genre. It has, of course, been picked up into real life revolutions. And I think part of it is actually the symbol. So I'm doing it, the Mockingjay symbol. And I think that a big part of it is actually the fact that it has something so recognizable. And there is something about that that contributes to a pop culture footprint, aside from the quality of the story itself.
Like Spock's greeting, right? The hand symbol, the hand gesture. Mm-hmm. I think it absolutely helps to have something so recognizable that can kind of transcend through time. And we kind of do that now with GIFs and memes, don't we?
Yep.
You know, a lot of this generation, the younger generation, they use, for instance, Friends memes or Friends GIFs without necessarily having watched Friends or even other film scenes. I realized my cousins who are younger than me sort of make references to things without having watched the original thing. It's actually just a small aspect of something that gets kind of memeified. Mm. So I wonder whether... Yeah, I think something being instantly recognizable is a big part of how something becomes a classic. Lines or one-liners, you know, I'll make you an offer I can't refuse. You don't have to have watched The Godfather to know that line.
I also think that it works in layers. Like if you can watch a movie as a kid or as a teenager. So The Hunger Games is a YA novel. It's based on a series of YA novels. But the themes are very, very deep. And I think that if you watched it as, because it's PG, so you can watch it when you are like 12 or 11. And maybe a lot of the themes won't hit you the same as they would if you watch it as an adult. So if you can watch it once and enjoy it as a YA novel adaptation and then maybe watch it again in 5 years and go like, whoa, I didn't know that they were talking about this political thing or it was, you know, this heavy, or they had themes that were so adult, quote unquote, for the time. I think that works as well. A movie that unfolds every time you watch it. So it has a sort of like a multiple lifespan, not just a one-off thing and then you get to like digest everything at a go.
So I think part of that, for me, it comes down to strength of story and also somewhat... evergreen themes, because we're going to kind of explore a number of different genres. And I realize one that I'm going to say up front we missed out on in some ways is the teen movie. This is something we've dedicated a whole supercut to in the past, but teen movies are such a thing. They are, and I think that the reason why they are classics is because they remind you of what it felt like to be 18. And so when you are 36, when you're 56, whenever it was that this 18-year-old movie came out, you look back on it and you remember. And so there's something about that theme, right, that has that unfolding feeling that you're talking about, Arvin. And I think that teen movies, they're underrated films because they're kind of silly. Most of the time it's about crushes that you know won't last once graduation happens. But it somehow doesn't matter because it's about that intensity of feeling. And when we think about those 90s films and how few of them have survived... I was thinking about 10 Things I Hate About You.
I was just thinking about that the moment you said teen movies.
Because it's a classic. And I know that that doesn't qualify even within the bounds of our own game. But I think it's just an example of how classics don't have to be... I don't know why I keep saying Ben-Hur. They don't have to be Lawrence of Arabia. They don't have to be Apocalypse Now. They can also be Say Anything. They can be, Breakfast Club. They're all these things, right, that... It doesn't have to be always so big. It just is a classic.
Which is why I think particularly for teen movies, I don't think we are qualified to determine what's going to be the future's classic teen movie. Because for us, it
How
was the movies...
You?
I'm sorry, I am not a teenager. I don't know about the two of you.
Oh, wow.
Maybe you're just very mature looking teens. Who knows? Because
the hits just keep coming. Like they don't stop.
Mean Girls. Okay. I was going to say, because something like Clueless or 10 Things or Mean Girls, those are from when we were teenagers, right? Or close to being teenagers. And I think every generation has a version of that. And they're only classics to that generation. Mm. I don't think my mom is going to think Clueless is a classic, right? But I also am not going to think High School Musical is a classic. Mm. But I think that some people who grew up with High School Musical will.
I think on the opposite end of that same spectrum is something like 500 Days of Summer. So when it first came out, everyone's like, oh, how romantic, it's a love story and stuff. But then as the years go on, they were like, this is a highly misunderstood film and there's something fundamentally wrong with Joseph Gordon-Levitt's like leading character, right? So that's, I think that movie has legs. Like, it disappeared for a while and then it came back up. I don't know how old it is. It might be a classic already. But that's, I feel like that's a good example of a movie that sort of hits you a while later once you watch like video essays and like, you know, analysis of the movie itself.
So we want to know, what do you think are going to be classics in the future? So they have to be things that came out in the last 10 years, and whether it's on whether it's in film, whether it's in on our TVs, we just want to know, right? Like, what do you think is going to be looked back upon and everyone goes, oh yeah, that's a true classic? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So now we're about to close off this side with a clip of one of Arvind's picks.
Yes, so The Last Jedi. And the reason I picked The Last Jedi is because I think it has all the makings of a classic. You know, it's misunderstood. It has stories that is divisive and people have like different opinions of it. But because of all those things and because of the amount of love and hate that it has, I think it's going to keep going on and on and on as a debate. And at some point, people are going to look back and go like, this is one of the greatest movies that came out that year, or probably one of the best Star Wars movies ever made.
100%. I think it's going to get that tag that most movies aspire to, ahead of its time.
Yes.
I failed you, Ben. I'm sorry.
I'm sure you are. The resistance is dead. The war is over. And when I kill you, I will have killed the last Jedi.
Amazing. Every word of what you just said was wrong. The rebellion is reborn today. The war is just beginning. And I will not be the last Jedi.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, it is 7:51 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvind, all of whom are ready to ride some dragons, start some wars and head towards an unsatisfying ending. And I'm sorry, I'm not over it. I will never be over it, I think. We're talking today about future classics, or things that we think were released in the last 10 years, but we think will be viewed in the next 10, the next 20, as classics of the time. And Game of Thrones, for better or for worse, was such a pop culture phenomenon. I think every generation you have one, right? There'll be your X-Files, there'll be your something that everybody gathers around. It's a true water cooler show. And Game of Thrones was definitely that.
So I'm going to be the I suppose, the bad last season in a great first show, and say that I actually don't think Game of Thrones is going to end up being a classic. I feel like the progressive downturn of the show is going to work against it, and in time, all people will talk about is the bad ending. And I think it's a pity because it started off great. The first few seasons were so, so good. But I also don't think, I think there will be so many other fantasy shows, other iterations of this story that will end up being more memorable.
Can I just say that I think that the fan hatred, frankly, of the showrunners is part of the issue here, because it the way the people who love it having turned on it so deeply, I think it's only going to get worse. So if you think about word of mouth and the way people talk about shows, then in that sense, I agree with you that I don't think Game of Thrones will age well, partly because the showrunners didn't respect the fans, I think, towards the end.
But that's exactly why I think it will keep going on and on and on, because, and I say this as a nerd, nerds love to hate things, like, for a long, long time. We recently saw a certain director's cut of a certain film because of that kind of hate, right? They don't let things go. And it's the same for The Last Jedi, going back to Star Wars for a bit. It's that hate that I think will keep the movie going for a long time until people sort of like flip and go, no, it wasn't so bad. The same thing happened to the Star Wars prequels. The same thing's going to happen to The Last Jedi. And I think Game of Thrones, for all the wrong reasons, will be in conversation because of people going, remake season 8, or, you know, have a do-over, or let the spin-off seasons be better and stuff, which will keep it in conversation as a classic, but a classic for all the wrong reasons.
It's a very Star Wars and Game of Thrones thing, isn't it? To be driven by hatred and then you just keep going and going.
Hatred, but also a weird sense of hope. Like, there'll always be something better around the corner.
I get that. So we've been asking you for your thoughts. We're sharing ours as well. What do you think's been released in the last 10 years that in times to come, in years to come, is going to be looked upon as a classic of its type? And we have a selection of responses. So there is one that I think is interesting. So Josephine on Instagram says the John Wick trilogy, Train to Busan, Kingdom, also Matrix, but Matrix is, I think, well into classic territory. It's like 20 years old, more or less. So yeah, but I think John Wick, partly because of its reinvention of the genre, and Train to Busan for the same reason.
And John Wick because of the reinvention of Keanu. I think Keanu himself, because of the meminess and the and just his persona, the larger in lifeness of who he now is, I think John Wick will end up a classic. At least the first one.
It's our new Die Hard, right? For like I think it's gonna keep going on and on as our, even if the sequels come out and it isn't up to par and it isn't as good as the first three John Wick
movies.
Then
they cast like some young teen star to be his son.
Yeah. And Keanu looks like someone's son all the time. So it's difficult to see him having a son. But yeah, you know, it'll go on as like our iconic sort of action film, I think.
Yeah, but is like Baba Yaga the same as Yippee-ki-yay, censored, censored? Because it's not really the same, right? And I think you need a catchphrase for an action film in particular. I think you need something.
So are you saying Taken will be more of a classic than John Wick because I've got a particular set of skills is more catchphrasey?
He was talking to a bed. He had no understanding that he was talking to a person. I don't know. I mean, I think Taken is actually kind of in classic territory, whether we like it or not. So I'm not saying necessarily that it's a must-have, but I think it's helpful for some genres more than others.
And especially for action heroes. I think we associate action heroes with a particular line or a particular scene, and I think it helps.
I think what John Wick lacks in catchphrases, it makes up with iconography. So you know that he has the suits and he has the beard and the hair.
And the dog.
And the dog. Keanu.
And the Keanu. And the dog. So I think that even though he doesn't say a lot and there's not a lot of dialogue, and you can't actually quote him about anything, you can draw a picture of John Wick and people would know that's John Wick.
Yeah, I get that. We also have, so Sinlin on Instagram says Avengers Endgame. Kelvin is saying the same thing, saying, yeah, Game of Thrones and Avengers Endgame. And that is also an interesting one, I think, because I'm not sure. I feel like the Avengers is so big now that I can't figure it out. I can't see it for the sum of its parts.
Yeah. So yeah. I think that the Avengers as a whole will be remembered, or the Marvel movies, all of them, the superhero movies as a whole will be remembered as a movement, sort of like this thing that happened in the 2000s, however. Mm-hmm. Or it might still be happening. And so it's a phase that never ends.
Yeah, I don't think you can pull apart like any MCU film and call it like a classic. But as a whole, the MCU is a classic and it'll keep being a classic for as long as it lasts, right? The mention of Avengers Endgame is also interesting because it is the biggest movie in the world of all time. I think Avatar just beat it again. But so it's weird that such a huge film and such a pop culture icon can't stand alone as a classic. And I say that as someone who would pick Avengers Endgame over any other movie anytime given the choice, but it's weird that it doesn't have its own legs in a way.
Well, because you can't ask someone to watch 20 movies before understanding why something is a classic, right?
Exactly.
Yes, and also the heft of that movie doesn't work if you haven't seen the preceding 19. So it's a little bit difficult. Like all the Easter eggs, the way the story has been building up, it just doesn't quite land if you don't know everything. And how can you know everything if you haven't been watching everything? But we, again, keep those thoughts coming. We want to know what you think are going to be the classics of the future, what's been released in the last 10 years or so that kind of meet that mark, right? Whether it's movies or TV shows. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be closing off the site with a little clip of a film that I think we're going to be talking about more later on. But just to say that I think Denis Villeneuve is not I think. Denis Villeneuve is one of my favorite directors working currently, and I think that a lot of his movies are going to be future classics.
I think he's going to be a classic director in the future.
It's basically how he works, right? Like everything in his format and his blueprint is like classic this, classic that. You can revisit this in 20 years and then you might understand it.
Well, yes, fair enough. So we're going to come back and talk about Denis Villeneuve a little bit more. But here is one of, I think, a collective favorite of ours. It's Arrival.
Human. Okay, slow down, fellas.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
Oh, Meg, hey.
Hey, look, I wanted to thank you for being so great to me. So, I baked you a pie.
Oh, wow. Hey, that looks delicious. Wow, this is good. What's in there?
Well, there's some apples and some cinnamon and my hair.
What?
My hair is in the pie, Brian.
Ooh, you got some pie, huh? Can I have a piece?
Sure.
Ooh, let me have some of that Cool Whip.
What'd you say?
You can't have a pie without Cool Whip.
Cool Whip?
Cool Whip, yeah.
You mean Cool Whip?
Yeah, Cool Whip.
Cool Whip.
Cool Whip.
Cool Whip.
Cool Whip.
You're saying it weird. Why are you putting so much emphasis on the H?
What are you talking about? I'm just saying it. Cool Whip. You put Cool Whip on pie. Pie tastes better with Cool Whip.
Say whip.
Whip.
Now say Cool Whip.
Cool Whip.
Cool Whip.
Cool Whip.
Cool Whip.
Cool Whip.
You're eating hair!
BFM 89.9, it's 8:07, and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. And on our supercut today, we are focused on the notion of what will be a future classic. Thank you very much to our listener, Venita, for bringing up the topic and suggesting it. And so the premise is this, right? What is the thing that we've watched in the last 10 years, whether it's on film or TV, that you think is just the best and will be remembered as the best, will be remembered as a classic in the future? We want to know what that is for you. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. That, of course, was a little bit of Family Guy.
I find Family Guy an interesting pick. I'm glad we did pick it. I'm not like the hugest fan, but I think it's an interesting way to talk about humor because I think humor changes so much over time that comedy classics are really difficult to pinpoint. Like, I don't know whether a lot of the sitcoms that our parents found funny are necessarily as funny now. And I don't know whether the series that we find funny now are going to continue to be funny. Family Guy is funny for a very particular way of a particular kind of humor. I wonder whether it'll hold up like 20 years, 30 years from now.
So I personally think it will. I love Family Guy, like love the show. And I think that as The Simpsons sort of decline, or sort of if they ever have like a final season, I think Family Guy will be the new Simpsons in about 10 years. Not because of the show or the longevity on TV. I don't know which season it's in now, but I think just because it's a meme. And if I follow a lot of like meme pages and stuff, and on a daily basis, at least twice, I'm not kidding, I see like a Family Guy clip, a Family Guy meme or Family Guy something will pop up on my feed on one of the social media platforms. I think because of that, because it has like an internet life and because its jokes can be made into like tiny capsules and put online so easily in like short form format, that's why Family Guy will go on to be a classic. It'll even if the show ends on TV, it'll keep going on online and find some sort of life there, I think.
I think television shows are so difficult to talk about now, partly because the reasons why they become classics or the reasons why they endure are sometimes out of regular control, in the sense that they almost have nothing to do with the quality of the show itself, but on those sorts of strange, all the recipes, all the things that go into a recipe of what makes a cult classic, right? You can't really predict what the internet is going to pick up on, who is going to be the internet's emblem or hero, you know, what's going to happen in that sense. And on top of that, also when it moves around from streaming service to streaming service, because I'm thinking here about something like The Office, which we've talked about a lot on the show, and it regained a certain level of popularity after it hopped onto streaming services and in a particularly difficult year, in the same way that Friends kind of regained a whole bunch of momentum, again, because of the pandemic, which, you know, nobody would have predicted, and also because of streaming. So the ways in which we watch things, the ways in which we binge things, and the ways in which platforms buy shows, I think all contribute to the sense that I really don't know. I couldn't possibly say in terms of television and comedy in particular, right? Like these sorts of 20-minute sitcom type things. I don't know how to kind of gauge it anymore.
I'm actually fairly pessimistic about the future of TV in terms of being able to generate classics. And I think that's because the old idea of what made a television show a classic, the water cooler conversation, the following every week for a new episode to come out and everyone watching it at the same time and not being able to get it again if you miss that airing time, all of those things have changed. So people now consume television content in particular in silos. So at any given time, any show I might watch, other than maybe Game of Thrones, I think I can count on maybe a hand the same people, like the number of people who are watching it at the same time as I am. Mm-hmm. And so I think that does a lot in terms of not really ensuring longevity. And I find that people watch things at different times, in different paces. You might stop for a while and start again after a while. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's being a little too negative, but I kind of feel like we may not necessarily have TV classics.
So, which is why I think Lost will become a TV classic in time, because it ended, this is bending our own rules a bit, because it ended 11 years ago. But it counts. So I think Lost will go on for that reason, because one, it had that water cooler effect. And two, it had that weekly sort of suspense effect. Like you had to tune in every single week to know what was going on or what the mystery would be or what they would solve. In that same way, I think services like HBO and Disney sort of splitting their shows and doing the weekly drop instead of the Netflix format of putting everything on and the go will help them in the long run. And I think there are more potential classics on those services for that reason alone, because it has like a longer footprint. It has like 2 months or 3 months of a lifespan compared to a Saturday and Sunday in 2021, you know?
I don't like how Netflix shows look. And I've said this before. I think that they all, just as a lot of the ABC and NBC sitcoms used to look a very particular way, as if everybody shared a studio, it looks as if Netflix kind of, and I think they do, you know, shares a bank account and a technical team. And so because of that, the backdrops, the lighting all tend to look a very certain way. And so because of that, the idea that Netflix is housing original classics kind of bums me out. But I also suspect that you're probably right. It's just not a future that I particularly, it's not the kind of future classic I was looking forward to. We have, let's see, a pretty fine selection of comments. So Sarah is saying, weathering with you and your name. And I think that both of those are definitely prime examples of classics for a lot of the kind of emotional reasons that we've talked about, but also because they're beautiful to look at.
Oh, I think Your Name, even though it hasn't hit that classic mark yet, is definitely already in that territory.
That's one of those movies that I have to watch, but I haven't seen yet.
Don't watch it on a plane. I watched it on a plane. I dehydrated myself. It's a lovely film, but it's that kind of movie. We also have Prem, I think, on Instagram saying Dragon Ball, Super Broly and Demon Slayer.
I have not watched any of those.
Same.
But I'm sure for a particular set, that's a classic. Mm-hmm.
So my thing about Dragon Ball, right, is that it's similar to Star Wars. At what point do you consider something a classic in its own right when it's part of a classic property in the first place?
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting question to bring us. We talked about Avengers and it has the same challenge, right? With Star Wars, though, I feel like a lot of the stories can stand on their own. They can be self-contained and you don't necessarily have to know too much to be able to engage with each individual film.
Especially now with the spin-offs and stuff.
Yes.
I'm going to admit something about Dragon Ball. I have no idea if it's ended or if it's still going on. Because I know Dragon Ball is still a huge thing in the pop culture verse. I don't know what version or what series or where it is in its own timeline. Or if there is a timeline.
I never watched Dragon Ball. So
I feel like this has turned into a confessional. Maybe Prem can tell us if he's listening.
We have some that are breaking our 10-year rule, but they are good films nonetheless, or at least classics in their own right. So Michael on WhatsApp says, classic teen movies, American Pie 1, 2 and 3.
I think American Pie for sure, right? It sort of shaped and reshaped the teen comedy genre.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And because of its raunchiness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Aslan also says, the first Lord of the Rings, hands down, it has everything and it has its Eternal Hope. So I think Lord of the Rings is already a classic, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a future classic. It's a classic at the moment. However, I wanted to branch that out and talk about The Hobbit, which is, in fact, within our, I think so. It is within our 10-year bracket. And for some reason, doesn't get the same love as the original trilogy.
No, I don't think that the Hobbit films, as much as I actually enjoy them, are ever going to be classics. I think they're fine. Like, you can watch them alongside your Lord of the Rings yearly revisit.
And your dwarf songs.
Yeah. But I really don't think that they're going to be. Also, The Hobbit came out in 2012. So, yes, it is within our 10-year
window.
Yeah.
The Hobbit movies look janky, or they look janky when they came out. So, yeah, I don't think they qualify. I love them. Like, I love them to bits and pieces, but no, they don't qualify.
While we're talking about animation, Pixar hasn't made an appearance yet in our list, but the next one is one of mine. So I think that this was the first time that Pixar kind of went so inwards, right? And it was a huge difference for the kinds of children's stories that we often, or that we were used to up till then. It's like, because it's always an external adventure. People are in the woods. People are in the, or fish are in the sea and then in aquariums. Toys are on the street. There's always a sort of external thing. But Inside Out was the first time, really, that the adventure is primarily taking place in the mind. And I think that people will continue to kind of look to it and point to it when they're trying to talk to their children about feelings, about feeling things, about why they might be reacting in certain ways. So I think it's a future classic. Here's a little bit of Inside Out.
I'm joy. This is sadness. That's anger.
What?
This is disgust. And that's fear.
Ah!
We're Riley's emotions.
Woo-hoo!
These are Riley's memories. They're mostly happy, you'll notice, not to brag.
I wanted to maybe hold one.
What happened? Sadness?
She did something to the memory.
Is everything okay? I don't know.
Take it back, Joy!
Try! Joy, no,
let
wait!
Go.
The core memories!
Ah! No! Ah!
Can I say that curse word now?
What do we do now?
Nothing's working! Why isn't it working?
We have a major problem.
Oh, I wish Joy was
is here.
We can fix this. We just have to get back to headquarters.
That's long-term memory. You could get lost in there.
Think positive.
Okay. I'm positive you will get lost in there.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
How do you feel now?
I can't move.
You can't move.
Why can't I move?
You're paralyzed. Just like that day when you did nothing. You did nothing. Now, sink into the floor.
Wait.
Sink.
BFM 89.9, it's 8:21, and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Sharmilan Arvin. We're talking today about classics, but not the classics that we're thinking of now, more like in 2030. What are the classics going to be, right? What are we going to think of as something that we've seen recently, but in the future they're going to be like, that was a classic. That's what we want to know today. And you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 with your picks. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. That was, of course, a little bit of Jordan Peele's Get Out. And I think that Get Out, to me, is a surefire classic in the sense that it also, in many ways, changed and shaped the genre. And I mean, horror has always contained social commentary, right? That's part of its charm. At least some of them do. But I think that Get Out kind of reinvigorated that.
It also, I think it also introduced a whole new way of thinking about how to tell stories that have to do with race. You know, without having to necessarily be about, especially African-American experiences, right? Slavery or gangs or disempowered areas. Instead, it took a genre that historically used to be about fairly unrealistic things and made it so realistic without taking away the horror element.
And I think for the first time in a long time, so people use the word like elevated horror, which I don't, it's a bit pretentious, but it sort of gave way for that elevated horror, right? There's so many movies that came out immediately after Get Out that followed in its footsteps that didn't tell that typical horror story of like a slasher or a killer or some sort of monster in the shadows or whatever. And it's purely because of Get Out. I personally think that Jordan Peele will make a movie so big in time that will make people forget about Get Out. I don't know why, but I feel like because that's his first major film, right? I think that in time he will find some sort of momentum and people will think of that film as a classic and then go back and rediscover Get Out and go like, oh, but you should check this one out because that's the first one he did.
So we talked about Denis Villeneuve earlier about as a future director to like sort of the Martin Scorsese of 30 years from now. I think Jordan Peele will be one of them as well.
Oh, for sure.
Why? I mean, I agree. But I think that it's hard to kind of tamp down why, aside from, oh, they're really talented. And, you know, because we tweeted about this as well, and the GIF that we attached that, we always attach a GIF, was of La La Land. And there was a whole crop for a while of like really, really talented young filmmakers. I mean, they're still around, but it just felt like they all came out at the same time. So, you know, your Damien Chazelle's, your Barry Jenkins. And it's just, I don't know what it is that sets them apart, whether it's a particular eye, whether it's a particular form of storytelling. Because when you reference someone like Martin Scorsese or when you talk about Quentin Tarantino, we're definitely in auteur territory.
So for me, with Jordan Peele and Denis Villeneuve, I'm sure I'm saying that four different ways each time. It's that every single project they've done, and with Jordan Peele, I'm even talking about Key and Peele, the shorts, right? I've never been bored. I've never ceased to be surprised by the things they do. And I think that's kind of important in terms of longevity, a sense of being able to experiment and constantly surprise your audience.
For me, in a weird way, for me, I think it's the budget and the sense that they are holding back. I feel people like Jordan Peele, like Denis Villeneuve, are not able to do what they want to do to their full potential because they lack the budget and the resources. The same way Spielberg couldn't make Jurassic Park before 1993 because he didn't have the technology or the resources. So he made all these big films and these great movies, but then Jurassic Park came out and people are like, whoa, that's Steven Spielberg. I think these filmmakers have the same issues that they lack a certain funding, but then in time they'll get like the perfect platform to make their magnum opus.
So part of that is ambition, right? And I think the fact that you can see the ambition unfolding even on the screen right now. And I think with Denis Villeneuve, part of it is definitely also the variety of what he's done. Because we talked about Arrival, there was also Blade Runner. And I think if you're going to take over Blade Runner from Ridley Scott, you better have some ambition. And then Sicario. So it's been a big mix of stuff, and in each case he's just kind of landed it. We've been asking you though what you think the future classics will be, and we have so many just genuinely really good ones. Since we just talked about Get Out, I wanted to read this one from Delma, who says Inception, A Quiet Place, which is the one that I was really thinking of, and yeah, I 100% agree, and maybe Pineapple Express.
Oh, Pineapple Express is such a great choice. I love that film. The only reason I think it's not going to end up a classic is because I think James Franco has fallen out of favor and will never climb back up.
I think he might make it, you know. I suspect.
Like 10 years from now, people will forget about the unsavoriness.
Unsavoriness, the Oscar craziness, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he could have if Seth Rogen didn't disown him recently.
That's true.
I think doing that sort of put him in a corner and he's not going to be able to come out.
But Inception, yeah, it's interesting none of us brought up any of Nolan's films. And I think that's only because the most recent one he did, I don't think is going to be his classic. But otherwise, I think Inception for sure, Prestige,
Interstellar,
any number of his films could end up future classics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Also, yes. I think that he's reached, like, in a weird way, like the peak of his filmmaking. Like, you know, he's going to keep making these sort of films, which is not bad, but it's sort of like you know what to expect from Nolan from here on out. If that makes sense.
Ayo, we are so spoiled. Listen to us. We're like, oh, Christopher Nolan's reached his peak. We just know he'll be this good from now on. Let's move on. Okay, we also have Kim who says, after listening to the clips you played, it's the music, isn't it, that determines what are going to be classics? And I think, Kim, there's certainly something to that. There are certainly great theme songs that have helped movies and shows on their way to classicdom. I referenced X-Files earlier, and I think the X-Files theme song is in some ways more classic than the show itself.
Absolutely. And Superman, for instance, right? And some films, you remember them just because you hear a strain of music.
Actually, I think that's how, or that's why, some TV shows are classics just because of their openings. Like Friends. Like, you know the Friends mm-hmm. opening theme song. Like, everyone knows their theme song. And a lot of, like, opening intros to TV shows are classics, but the TV shows themselves are not.
Yeah, like, what's the dun 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 dun? Like, I know that music, and yeah. Now I just cannot remember what show it's from. Hayao Silva.
Lone Ranger?
Lone Ranger, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah. There you go.
My favorite theme song is still MacGyver. It's hard to beat. I don't know. I can't get it out of my head. We also have Thevin who says, perhaps Breaking Bad is already considered a classic. I would argue, yes. But the spin-off Better Call Saul would probably also go that way. Would Mad Men be considered a classic based on this 10-year rule? As for movies, I'm not a fan of this film, but Boyhood, only because of the length of filming the show. I do think Sing Street may go on to be classic given the homage to 80s music.
I'm going to say Mad Men 100%, but then I'm a huge Mad Men fan. Boyhood is interesting because had you asked me 2 years after it came out, I would have said yes. But now I'm like, does anyone remember Boyhood? Really? Do they talk about it and say, Boyhood, I want to rewatch that this weekend?
So that's so interesting that you said this weekend because it just showed up on streaming. And it's trending like locally. So I think in that sense, a lot of things will become classics because of streaming services like Boyhood. But yeah.
And the algorithm that just suggests it to you.
And the algorithm. But I think if you had brought this up 2 weeks ago, I would have said the same thing. Like, no, I wouldn't have ever thought of Boyhood. Now I'm going to think of Boyhood because of streaming services.
Guys, don't give away all our product placement secrets all at once. We also have, let's see, Edwin saying my future classic movies would be Wolf Warrior 1 and 2, The Wandering Earth, Hi Mom. These movies are from China. Also worth mentioning some English films like, The Irishman, Joker, Aquaman and Wonder Woman.
So I love that he brought up Aquaman. I mean, all of those are great choices. Aquaman, I think, is going to be that classic. Like, you know, the dumb classic that you love to watch? Like the TV2 repeat. Yeah, yeah. Because Aquaman isn't great, but it's great fun.
It is great fun. Yeah, it's very easy to watch. Yeah.
I think Wonder Woman, again, falls into that category of, it's almost like it was born a classic. It's very hard sometimes to talk about characters and stories that have been around for as long as Wonder Woman and a lot of the comic characters have been, because it's the same reason for why it's difficult to talk about Spider-Man or even to isolate a single one of the Spider-Man films, because Spider-Man is almost inherently a classic character.
Yes, and sometimes it's very difficult to view them as separately, I think. Batman is a little bit easier. Somehow for me, X-Men, Spider-Man, they all tend to kind of form a whole.
Yeah. I was also going to say, I think Wonder Woman might be damaged by its sort of like
by
surroundings.
The sequel.
The sequel and the messiness of that universe.
I will never, you know, I will never agree with you guys about Wonder Woman 1984. I enjoyed it. I stand by them both.
But it's not a classic.
We can agree to disagree. Let's see. So many messages. Az says, any movie with Hiroyuki Sanada. If memory serves, this is not the first time that Az has sent in a sort of fanboy message about Hiroyuki Sanada.
I think Hiroyuki Sanada is a classic. He needs to make better choices with films.
So Mortal Kombat's a classic?
No, he is. Every part that he's in, make like a reel and I'll watch that.
Ah, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
I forgot that he was in Rush Hour 3. So I was just sort of flipping channels and then it showed up and I'm like, man, Hiroyuki Sanada
wasn't
is in a bunch of things.
Wasn't he also in one of the Wolverines?
He was in The Wolverine.
Ah, right. Yeah.
He was also in Avengers Endgame.
Yes, he was.
Oh, yes, he was.
Yeah.
Yes, he was. You know, being fought by someone with a not great haircut. So, yeah, I think Hiroyuki Sanada is fantastic. I don't always love his choices, but I love watching him. I agree. Kelvin says, Crazy Rich Asians, Mandalorian, The Greatest Showman, and Pixels. Now, The Greatest Showman is a particularly interesting one because critics hated that film, like hated. And it became such a huge success, more or less on the basis of word of mouth. And if I think that that is a great building block for a future classic.
And the basis of the song. So I really didn't love Greatest Showman, but the songs were everywhere. And people loved that like Broadway style film and great performance as well by Hugh Jackman. And I think all of that, it's one of those that if it was on TV, I'd watch it.
Yeah. And also, I tend to like the movie because you see how much Hugh Jackman likes the movie. You know what I mean? He's so passionate about the way he sings and putting all his like love and effort into the film that you can't help but like the film. But I don't like the film as is.
Yeah, I get that. We also Crazy Rich Asians is an interesting one because I can't tell yet. I think that it has all the makings of a classic rom-com, and rom-coms are ripe for watching, re-watching, and it made such a splash, particularly in our region, because of its depiction of our region. But I can't tell whether it's got the legs.
I was never a fan of Crazy Rich Asians, so I think that whatever classicdom it's going to achieve, it's going to be for what it is, which is that first big Asian cast film in 30 years or something like that, and not so much because I actually think it's worthy of the title.
Unless the sequel does like bonkers well at the box office again.
MZ says, Archer, season 19, my man Arv.
Was that season 19 for Family Guy? I think Family Guy is in season 19.
Family Guy is season 19, that's true.
Archer's a good shout though. Archer's a good show.
I actually think Archer might have longer legs than Family Guy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
It might. It could. Rick and Morty?
Rick and Morty for sure. I think that's one of those cult classic type things.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we're talking about adult animation. I think Rick and Morty definitely has got it. We all also recently loved Invincible. And since we're talking about animation, I wanted to ask you whether you thought Invincible might be a future classic.
I loved it so much that I want to say yes, but my worry is that the superhero field is too crowded. And I think that many things will not end up classics, even though they deserve to be, just because there's just too much superhero stuff.
I think it could have been if they did the weekly release. So it would have had like people tuning in every week and building momentum.
That would be a great show for a weekly release. Like I couldn't wait for the next episode.
It became like a blip in 2021. And then I have a feeling like it'll disappear in a few months. But honestly, if I had to pick, like, yeah, it's like it has all the makings of a classic.
I really enjoyed it. It is also interesting because it's going to prevail for a while in the sense that while it's an animated series now with a crazy, bonkers, good voice cast, it's also going to be a live action. So the character of Invincible is going to be around for a while. Maybe that will keep it going. Bebop, Bebop, says V for Vendetta, which comes up, honestly, once a week now, even though for this one, unfortunately, it is 16 years old, so it does not fall within our 10-year bracket. Xiong'an says, ooh, it's really hard to think with which one, but I believe Logan will stand the test of time. It subverted the superhero genre to tell a really compelling Western story about one man's search for redemption in a violent and desolate landscape.
I love that. I think Logan, like 100%, it goes down as one of the greats or one of the classics. But I don't know if it can work alone. I think Logan needs Hugh Jackman 17 years as Wolverine and in its history. You need to be able to latch on to Professor X and Professor Xavier and the history of the X-Men. If you didn't know any of that and you just jumped into Logan, you might think it's like what is happening? It's like the driest Western I've ever seen. You know what I mean? So you need that love going in and knowing that it's coming to some sort of conclusion.
So I'd say X1 and X2 and then maybe First Class and Days of Future Past.
So just leave behind all the bad ones.
The other terrible ones and then do Logan and you're on your way to a classic.
I think you're fine with X1, X2. I mean, I'm not saying you have to skip everything, but if you just wanted to fast forward it to get to what is truly a great, great movie, I love Logan, then yes, you could do that. Wanil says, definitely Mad Max Fury Road. I still think about that movie every now and then, which is a great shout, and also is about one man's search for redemption in a violent and desolate landscape, to quote Xiong'an. So it applies across. Ken Hong says, I nominate Grand Budapest Hotel for the funny walk, and also Your Name and the Lego Movie, which I think is a very good shout.
I love Grand Budapest Hotel. It's probably my favorite Wes Anderson film. I certainly think it'll be one of those classics that we'll be talking about.
Just for the aesthetics, right?
Yeah.
Lego Movie is interesting because the first one did so well. Lego Batman did slightly less. And then nobody talks about the second Lego Movie. I think it's called The Second Piece.
There was a second Lego
exactly,
movie?
Exactly,
you
see?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I also didn't watch Ninjago, so yeah, I kind of fell off after the Lego Lobster, which for me was the high point of Lego Batman. I adored it. Alan says Idiocracy, which again is a movie that comes up on our show an awful lot from you guys. Kay says Nolan's Batman, definitely a classic. Michael, The Oceans Trilogy. Calvin, Joker, A Star is Born, which I think A Star is Born is interesting because it's a classic story. But I do think this iteration, the songs, if nothing else, are definitely going to be remembered that way as well.
Plus, I mean, it'll be the third Star is Born that's a classic. At this point, in English, right? Yeah. So at this point, it's kind of like a genre unto itself.
There have been so many mentions of Joker, which is interesting. I think that's definitely going down as a classic. I just don't know if because of DC's messiness, if it will get lost in that shuffle and that mumbo jumbo. But as a standalone, like 100% a classic.
So keep those thoughts coming. We've been talking today about future classics, the things that we've watched in the last 10 years that in 10 years from now will be looked at as just great, you know, classics of their type. You can keep those thoughts coming. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can, of course, write to us at movies@bfm.my and find us on BFM Popcorn. We are on Twitter. We're on Instagram. And thank you very much for listening. This has been Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.